On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I give our biggest takeaways from the scrimmage games, and we preview the restart opener against the Orlando Magic. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. How good does it feel to say that official basketball is back while we are recording this? I was listening to the dulcet tones of Ian Eagle and Stan Van announce the Pelicans Jazz game to kick off the official NBA return. Enough with the scrimmage games. We are back in games that I guess technically matter. Marcus Barahal with me, of course. Marcus, I don't know, I feel like a kid in a candy store, like a 5-year-old on Christmas Eve. Every analogy just to convey how excited I am.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, tonight still feels a little bit like we're like not totally there, just because it's just four teams in these two games, but then like after this it really gets going. I mean, the Nets game tomorrow is during the day, and there's games like pretty much constantly for the next few weeks, starting with Friday the 31st. So a lot is going to be happening over the next few days. And like you said, good to hear Ian and SVG. That's a great combo on the broadcast.
That really is. That might be my ideal combo. Like, yeah. I love Ian Eagle. We are we have a treat as Nets fans to listen to a fantastic broadcasting team, and between him and Ruko as the play-by-play guys, can't really go wrong there. But you know, he's the best in the business. And then, I mean, Van Gundy, I just love the guy. I feel like I love his whole media tour recently.
He's great on Twitter.
Yeah, like he's awesome. I'm not a Jeff Van Gundy guy, but I am a huge Stan Van Gundy guy.
Yeah, I think I used to be Team Jeff in the Van Gundy brother power rankings, but definitely I'm more of a Stan guy now for sure. But yeah, good to have so much basketball back. We didn't get a chance, Josh, to recap or give our thoughts on any of the scrimmages. They kind of came and went. The first one was very disappointing if you're just looking at the margin. So, but we're here now, right?
Yeah, we are. And the Nets, at least, I would say, gradually got better. But you know, they won their second and then lost their third to the Jazz. But we're at least, you know, 1-1 the last two, competitive in the one they lost. At least showed at least some signs of being a functional basketball team, which is, I think, was not a given coming into this, given the decimation of their roster.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know. I had, like, expectations that they'd win a couple games coming into the scrimmages, and then that first one against the Pelicans just, like, really was, like, a punch to the stomach, and I felt like, oh, boy, like, are they going to go like actually 0-8 in this? Like, I know we kind of joke about it, but I was kind of banking on them winning like two, maybe three games in this and just being like somewhat respectable. But then after that first one, I was like, oh boy, this is not looking good. But
you thought they'd go in three?
if they got lucky. I mean, they play the Wizards. That's one they definitely could win. Yeah, and then I'm assuming they could steal one. Maybe there's another one where a team is kind of resting guys because they've already locked into seeding. So I wasn't ruling 3 and 5 out. I don't think that's crazy. But yeah, that first game, really disappointing. The only positive really was Rhodey Kurucs, who was kind of a bright spot throughout the three scrimmages. He played really well, really active on both ends, and he was playing a position that we hadn't really seen. He was backing up Jared Allen as the center. Dante Hall didn't play in any of the scrimmages. DeAndre Jordan, as we know, is not there. Nick Claxton is not there, so Rhodey got time playing the five. He looked really good. He was energetic, active, 5 steals in the 3 games. His shooting was off the charts. I mean, 8 for 12 from 3 in the 3 scrimmages. He was definitely the guy who jumped out the most to me, and I'm really excited to see what he does in these 8 seeding games.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, like, you know, his confidence was just so drained this year after everything that happened. He's kind of like the precocious freshman on the high school team, or maybe he's a sophomore where he had a decent freshman year, and now maybe as his sophomore, some of the other upperclassmen who were injured had come back, and he basically got buried, and now They've all graduated, so he has his time to shine. Like, I feel like he's expected to be one of the guys on this current iteration of the Nets. So I think that's just giving him confidence where if he plays poorly, he will still get minutes. Like, the Nets can't afford...
Right.
Like, there's no Nets team that's going to be out there where he's not playing at least 20 minutes a game, and he's probably going to get towards, like, 25 or 28. So he's going to be able to play through mistakes, and I think that's huge for a player like him that definitely has the tools there. And then from a jump shot perspective, has a really nice touch, I've always thought, and, you know, decent mechanics behind it. He just needs the confidence and to be decisive in whether he's going to shoot or whether he's going to pump fake and drive. So I think this could be the best thing that happened to him. And if it comes out of this, you know, bubble season for the Nets where they maybe win two games and hold off the Wizards for the 8 seed, but then just get pummeled by the Bucks, but actually have something and Kurucs as a solid role player, I think it's well worth it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, he's a guy who I had some expectations for coming into this season. Like you said, he kind of got derailed. But, I mean, if that jump shot is legit, and he was 3-for-4 from 3 in the last game against the Jazz, 3-for-3 from 3 in the previous one against the Spurs, like, that's huge. That's massive if he's able to shoot. Because, like, his defense, we've never really questioned. Like, he's a little skinny, but he really fights on that end. And it's really just been about, like you said, the confidence and if they're going to play him at the four or, like, play him basically not at center, like, he needs to be able to shoot and kind of space the floor for those other guys, particularly for LeVert, who's going to be on the ball a lot in this restart. So a really encouraging sign from him. Karras, I thought, was a little bit up and down, but nothing too concerning. His shot didn't look great in the opener, but he kind of picked it up. I'm going to chalk that up a little bit to rust. Overall, though, my biggest takeaway, besides Rhodey, was that the team needs to, like, get to the free throw line and they need to convert at the line. That was kind of a problem for them during the season, and we talked about how that and turnovers were really the two biggest issues on the offensive end for the Nets, and it was kind of similar in these scrimmage games. I mean, in the first game, Jan and Musa was 7-for-7 from the line. He led the team in scoring somehow, but everyone else combined for only 5 free throw attempts. In that last game against the Jazz, which they only lost by 5 after a nice comeback, they missed 14 free throws out of 27, so not great either. The one game they did win, they really, like, killed it from the free throw line, 28-for-37, ton of attempts, and that's really what this team needs, because it's kind of just LeVert. It's Tyler Johnson a little bit. He looked solid. Joe Harris is pretty consistent. You know what you're going to get from him, but they don't have a ton of guys who can really, like, pop offensively. And yep, if they're going to score and, like, keep up with a lot of these teams that they're playing, they kind of do need to, like, stop the clock, get some easy points, and just, like, kind of hold it until they get to, like, the last few minutes and maybe catch fire to push them over the top. Like, they're not going to be blowing the doors off teams offensively, whereas, like, a team like the Suns or the Wizards, who maybe have, like, a comparable amount of talent, those teams can maybe fly up and down a little bit more than this Nets team can. So I think getting to the line and hitting those shots is going to be big. So no clue if, like, the lack of fans will have an impact on that in these seeding games, but we'll see. That was definitely my biggest takeaway.
RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and super easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, those prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously Nets are hurt because no Mr. Whammy there to distract the opponents. But, I mean, free throw percent, like, the free throw thing goes back to the regular season, that they were not a good free throw shooting team, and it cost them some games. And obviously, you know, that's going to happen when you have your centers are Jarrett Allen, who was a good free throw shooter basically until the second half of last year, and now he's just sucked since. And it's really hurting. It's really, like, makes me sad because he's gone from, like, 73-75%, where it's like, that is very good for a center who's not offensively like skills oriented, to like 60%, where you're getting into liability territory on that front. And then DeAndre Jordan, who obviously has made massive strides in his career and very recently on free throw shooting, but still he's like 67%, so no great shakes there. And then LeVert's weirdly like a terrible free throw shooter. Maybe it's not weirdly, but he is. And then some of the good free throw shooters on the Nets, like even Joe Harris isn't like 90% as you'd expect. He's like 75, 78.
Yeah, and like all that added together kind of leads to what we saw in that Utah game where they went, again, 13 for 27 and wound up losing by 5. So hopefully nothing like that winds up happening in...
Did you know that the Knicks were the worst free throw shooting percentage team this year by 3.5% worse than the Pelicans, who were second to last? They shot 69.4% on free throws.
Nice.
Yeah, not nice.
No, not nice. Yeah, I mean, I can't even think of, like, who would be a good free throw shooter on that team. I guess Randall's maybe okay. Like, Mitch is not going to
knock Ellington?
Down free throws. RJ, yeah, Ellington, if he gets minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm looking forward to these eight seeding games. On the Nets schedule, you've got the Magic 2 p.m. tomorrow in the afternoon, then Wizards, Bucks, Celtics, Kings, Clippers, Magic again, and Blazers to finish it. But Josh, those first two games are going to be really important against the Magic and the Wizards.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Nets, if they lose both of those, one, you're giving up a game to the Wizards. I think it's pretty like, regardless if it's a 7 or 8 seed, at this point it doesn't really matter. Orlando's probably going to pass them.
Mm-hmm.
If you give up a game to the Wizards and you also lose to the Magic, it's not it does not bode well moving forward when you play real teams like Milwaukee and Boston and Orlando again and the Clippers. So if the Nets lose those two games, they're not going to go better than 1-5 at best for the rest of the stretch. They're just not. I think they're going to beat the Wizards at the very least. I would be pretty surprised. And then when you have Orlando, I think Orlando kind of poses a bit of a difficult matchup in that you have. Like the Nets right now basically have one guy that can create their own shot. The Magic have a bunch of guys that can do it a little bit, and they have a variety of ways they can score. Getting Jonathan Isaac back obviously is huge for them because he's just a monster defensively. He can guard out the perimeter, can defend the paint. He's huge, really long wingspan. If LeVert starts to cook, you know, they could just put Jonathan Isaac on him. Obviously, they have a ton of different options when it comes to maybe starting with Fultz on him, going with Aaron Gordon. So they have a ton of different options, and they present a bit of a difficult matchup for the Nets. You have a guy in Vucevic who didn't have a particularly good two games against the Nets this year. He always killed them in the Brook Lopez days, but you know, Jared Allen is obviously a very athletic center and has a huge wingspan, so he can give Vucevic a bit of a problem, but obviously he's a guy that can go out and give you 20 points pretty consistently. You can do it from outside and inside, so it does present a difficult matchup there. But I think, you know, as far as the Nets go, I think it will be a good test for guys like LeVert, guys like Kurucs, to see kind of what they're made of. And obviously new Nets stalwart Tyler Johnson, I think we're excited to see what he can do in real games after having a pretty nice showing in the scrimmages.
Yeah, he was pretty efficient. He was able to get his own shot, to your point about it's really just LeVert. Like, Tyler Johnson can do it a little bit, which is nice, especially when Karis is resting. So it's not all on guys like Temple and Chioza to kind of create, which is, I mean, Chioza is fast and can get in it, but he's just so small. And Temple's not really, like, he shouldn't be handling the ball that much. He's more of like a spot-up guy. So definitely excited to see what Tyler Johnson can do. And for Kurucs, like, this is a real test because that Magic front line is going to be really imposing when you've got thick Mo Bamba with Vucevic and with Gordon and Jonathan Isaac. Like, that's a lot of size. And Dante Hall didn't play in any of the scrimmages. Not sure if he's going to be playing in this Magic game as we're recording. So it could just be Allen and Kurucs again as the backup five. So that's going to be a really big test out of the gate. Not a lot of teams have that much, like, size at the five anymore, and you can kind of get away with it in a lot of matchups, but Orlando is one of the few where you might not be able to, so that'll be really interesting also.
Yeah, they have some big wings also, like James Ennis, mm-hmm. Wes Iwundu, if he plays. I'm not saying any of these guys are world beaters. And, like, their guards are big, even Michael Carter-Williams.
Yeah.
If he gets some run in this. But, I mean, I think, are you excited to see future Nat Aaron Gordon in this? Like, are him and LeVert just going to trade jerseys at halftime?
Yeah, if they do a jersey swap after the game.
if he was playing.
Yeah, I would love if they did a jersey swap after the game and then just, like, fully, like, swap. Like, that was it. That was the official trade. Yeah, I mean, Aaron Gordon, I was watching some of the Magic scrimmage against the Lakers, and he looked good. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see kind of how many minutes guys are playing even, like, out of the gate, just because, like, the scrimmages, no one is really playing more than, like, 25-ish minutes for the Nets, so we'll see how the rotation breaks down. Jamal Crawford is doubtful for conditioning, so we probably won't be seeing him, but for everyone else, curious to see how that breaks down. Josh, there was also a quote from Garrett Temple about the team's messaging pregame about, like, social justice causes and anything involving the anthem or anything like that during the Jazz Pelicans game that is on as we record. Both teams, all the coaches and all the refs, all took a knee during the anthem, and Temple said that the team will be unified in any pregame message that they choose to do, but it's not set in stone as of now. So looking forward to seeing what the team does on that front, because obviously that's a message and a cause that still needs to be amplified, even though basketball is now back.
Yes, absolutely. It's definitely something that we can't kind of forget about and put aside now that basketball's back. Obviously, it has to be the top priority and the top focus. Obviously, this is a nice, I wouldn't even say distraction, I think just a nice way to promote the social justice cause. And, you know, I think it's really cool just watching the game right now, seeing what all the guys have on the back of their jerseys. And I think it does provide something more powerful and special than the dumb nickname jerseys that they used to do. Something that actually gives a purpose to why they play the game.
Yeah, this is like the polar opposite of that. I completely forgot about that, like, in relation to this.
They loved doing it for a time. I remember it was like when the Nets had got first year of Pierce and KG, and I think the first game they did it was the Nets Heat, and it was just like,
yeah,
why are we doing this?
They do it in baseball too. They have like a players weekend where there's a bunch of I think they play like a series in a little league stadium in Williamsport, and they all have like their nicknames on the back for a weekend. And I remember really wanting a Chris Sale Stickman jersey, because that was his name that he had on the back of his jersey.
I would cop one of those. Are you surprised that TLC was starting at the four and not Rhodey?
If that happens, like, in the actual games, I will be surprised. I think it was mostly because they wanted to use Rhodey as the backup five, so they probably didn't want to play anyone more than, like, a certain number of minutes, and so in that case, it maybe makes a little bit more sense to kind of stagger them, but once Dante Hall's back, for sure, that'll be different, and then even, like, in this first scrimmage against Orlando, if Hall doesn't play, I would expect Kurucs to play more minutes than he did in these last couple games. In the Utah scrimmage, he only played 22 minutes, so I would expect that to be ramped up, and so then you can play him and Allen together, and then also separately. So I'm kind of thinking he'll start at the four, but I don't know. TLC, I was more excited going into this for him than I have been through the scrimmages. He hasn't shot the ball particularly well from the field or from three, but who knows? It's a very small sample.
Yeah, I mean, I like TLC. I'm just, like, kind of indifferent for the most part. Like, I don't see him as a super high upside player. I actually am really excited for Dante Hall, weirdly.
Probably, yeah,
because I've never seen him play besides, like, a game or two at Alabama. But I never thought we'd be needing to rely on him this much.
Yeah. TLC also just added it all up. 2 for 16 from three in the three scrimmages. So not great.
12.5%. Nice.
Almost nowhere to go but up, though. So That's encouraging. And yeah, I'm like you, I'm really looking forward to Dante Hall, and hopefully he can get on the court soon, because he, like Kurucs, is kind of one of the few guys who is like kind of like an unknown to a certain extent, and like a prove it kind of guy in this environment. I kind of know what I'm getting from everyone else. Like, I'm sure like LeVert could explode or like take another step, but we kind of know like he's solid like as an NBA player, whereas guys like Kurucs and Hall are more on the fringes and could maybe like earn themselves a roster spot or more minutes in Kurucs's case next year.
Yeah. And I shouldn't hate on TLC, because he actually did a nice job this season, you know, shot basically 36% from three on maybe three attempts a game, had some nice moments, and definitely a guy that, even though he's 25 and some people might think he's more of a fully formed product, definitely needs a lot of seasoning. Just, again, it makes me sad that that Claxton isn't here and that he hasn't had the shoulder surgery. I would love to have him on this team.
Oh, my God. Claxton would be really... I mean, like, yeah, seeing all the praise that, like, Bol Bol is getting, I would love for Claxton to get some minutes here.
Yeah. What do you think of the... What do you thought of the whole Bol Bol thing? Like, because, yes, he is playing well, and, like, if you put it in the context of a second-round pick, obviously some of the stuff he can do on the court is great. But it's a lot because he's a novelty and he's Manute Bol's kid. His name is... Bol Bol. So I don't know. I take a little on. Like, if Claxton's name was Bol Bol, people would salivate over him also.
Yeah, I mean...
Claxton.
His, like, counting stats have been really good, and the highlights have been great, but he's, like, shot the ball really poorly. I don't know. I only watched one of the Nuggets scrimmages, and, like, he kind of does go in and out, but there were definitely stretches where he would, like, hit a three, get a block, hit a three, like, all consecutively, and, like, those flashes are really nice, and that's, like, kind of, like, tailor-made for social media, where you just put up, like, that 30-second clip, and everyone's, like, going crazy, but I don't know, over the course of the game, he was, like, definitely fading in and out, but I don't know, it was cool to see the flashes of potential. He didn't play at all during the season, so this is, like, his first, like, even taste of any kind of NBA game, so... he's definitely overhyped. He might not even be like an NBA player in 2 years, but like you said, there's like a real novelty in seeing a guy like as tall as he is, like shooting threes and stuff.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very I think accurate and objective assessment, so I commend you on that. David Locke would be
thank you
would be proud, and the host of Locked On Nuggets as well, Adam Morris, I believe.
I need to do a better job of learning who hosts every podcast.
Well, we'll edit that out if it's if it's not correct. I think that's right, or he used to be at least.
Okay.
Yes, it is right. Adam Morris.
Wow.
Yes, let's go.
Great pull.
Huge pull by me. So yeah, that will let's wrap it up. I think.
Yeah.
Predictions for tomorrow, Marcus. I am. First of all, extremely excited for the daytime basketball. Might feel a little bit differently if it was during a non-Friday or non-weekend, just because I have to work. And my boss, would, as much as they love that I do the podcast, would not be super keen on this, I don't think. I can check with them to see if I'm wrong. But very much excited to have that on during the day. I think I actually just scheduled a work call at 3 p.m., so I might need to move that. But, you know, very excited to see the Nets out there. Orlando has been a bit of a tricky matchup for them the last couple years, and the Nets were 0-2 against them this year. But I have an oddly good feeling. I think I'm feeling good about the way the team has been playing in the scrimmages. The roster kind of gets better on each glance I have after all the initial dropout. So, you know what? I'll be optimistic and predict a win 106 to 101.
I like it. Yeah, I'll jump on with you and predict a win. They've played really well the last two scrimmages, so hopefully they can keep that momentum going. I'll say 110 to 106. How about that?
Love it. both getting the dub in that. Based on this Pelicans-Utah game, it seems like the guys are in a pretty good rhythm, and there's going to be an abundance of offense. But we will see, of course. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal, B-A-R-A-H-A-L. I am at JMBass_. Subscribe to the podcast, rate us, review us, and if you missed it, go check out our interviews we did with Jonathan Charks from The Ringer and also comedian Joe Mandy and NBA superfan. Thought that was a really, really good one. They both were, and think those they stand the test of time a bit. And would very much appreciate you guys checking them out and give us a rating and review. And until next time, when we have some official basketball to talk about, be well.
Bye.